We don't talk about parenting every single week, but we are going to do a parenting series this week, and I'm calling it Instructions Not Included. I remember very distinctly when I came home with our firstborn. My wife and I came home with our firstborn, Gabriel, and he was tiny. He was a little early, and he was only about 5.5 pounds, and I could put him in one hand, and it was terrifying. I just thought, I'm going to break this little guy, and where's the instruction manual? Like, what do I do? How do we do this? And by God's grace, we've survived. He's almost 10 now. He's still living. We're very thrilled with that. He's a great little guy. He's getting baptized later this month, so I'm grateful for that. But we've all been there, right? We've all had those moments. And some of us, it's probably that initial freak out moment when you're coming home from the hospital. But then as you go along, there's always new challenges, right? There's always new moments where you think, okay, new world now. No idea how to handle this. No idea how to tackle this. And so as we're thinking through this, that's kind of the framework that I wanted to start with this series. Start with this. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. The world is a little bit different than when you and I grew up. And we've got some people who are in their 20s here up through, I don't know, 70s in here. And so we've got a wide range. And I don't really care how old you are. If you're in this room, I don't see anybody who's 5. So the world that we grew up in is not the world that our children are growing up in. You know, it's not unlike Dorothy. She grew up black and white. She's seen the world in this. It's very simple, right? And then she enters into Oz and is a brave new world, Technicolor, that she's never seen before, she's never experienced, and she's trying to figure out, what on earth do I make of this? And this is how I feel every day when I get online and I look at CNN, or I read ESPN, for that matter. It doesn't really matter. Wherever you go, it's like this is a completely different world than what I grew up in. The challenges that my kids are facing are completely different. And something that I hear all the time then in light of that is, I can't imagine being a child growing up in today's world. I hear that all the time. Has anybody ever thought that? I can't imagine being my child trying to grow up in this world. Does that freak anybody out? Maybe a few? Okay, that's why you're in here, right? And along with this, what I hear is, it's never been harder. In some ways, there are unique challenges for our kids today. It's never been more difficult to be a child. They're facing challenges that you and I simply did not have to face. They're unique in a number of different ways. I won't go into all of that, but I'm trusting you guys are tracking with me, that what our kids are experiencing is unlike what we've experienced. And therefore, in some ways, it has never been more difficult to be a child growing up in today's society. And in my mind, where that takes me then is, if we're to be their parents to help them navigate, then I would say, well, then has it ever been harder to be a parent? Well, in some ways, no. In some ways, it's never been more difficult. There are challenges here that are unique to where we are in the world and in this time, in this place, and it's never been more challenging. We're faced with questions and decisions that we never dreamed of, that our parents never dreamed of, that our grandparents certainly never dreamed of. And at the same time, there's never been more pressure on parents to do it right. Have you noticed this? That everywhere you turn, there is somebody, even as we're asking these questions, how should we handle all of these things that are being thrown at us all the time? Don't be overwhelmed. This was the 30-second brainstorm, okay? Think if I'd taken a full 60 seconds. All these things are being thrown at us, we have to figure out, how do we handle all these things? At the same time, everybody and their best friend's cousin's roommate all have very strong opinions on how we should handle all of these things, and they're very willing to let you know. Now, how they found you on Facebook, I don't know, but they did. And they're going to tell you that this is how your children should sleep. This is how they should eat. This is how they should study. This is how you should think about education. This is how they think about everything, okay? Good news. I'm not going to tell you any of that. You're welcome. Okay. So then we go, okay, as believers, where do we go? What do we do? How do we handle this? What are we going to do? We're going to run to Scripture, right? Great idea. Proverbs 22:6, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Man, that sounds good. I like this. But the author hasn't said anything about smartphones or social media or peer pressure or where my kids should go to college. He says I should train him up where he should go. Well, where should he go? You know, how do I get him into Harvard? How do I get him into Yale? Do I even want him to do that? Okay, so I've got all kinds of questions. When should my child get that smartphone? When should they get on social media? when they start getting bullied online, how should I handle that? Like, how? There's not a lot of detail here. Okay. It's weird that he doesn't bring any of that up. Should have seen that coming. Which leaves us, I think, with still the same question, what should I do? This is the question that we wrestle with a million times a day, and there's a million different ways that we can get it wrong. That's how it feels. A million different ways to get this wrong. What should I do in this situation? How should I handle this in this situation? And worst of all, right, what if I get it wrong? What happens to my child? And then whose fault is it? Okay, those are some questions we're going to get into later in the series. So where I want to take us this morning is take a step back. Like I said, I'm not going to tell you how to potty train your kids. I'm not going to tell you how to sleep train them. I'm not going to tell you whether they should go to public or private school. I'm not going to tell you how many sports they should play and for how many hours they should study and all of that, okay? There's a lot of different opinions, a lot of different places you can go, and people will tell you very definitively why and how you should do all of that. I would rather us think about how we process these decisions. I think it's far more valuable. So the question I want to ask is, how do we make decisions with regard to our children? But this is going to expand, obviously, to how we think about life as well. And then later on in this, we're going to tackle kind of our approach to this. So the first place I want to start is this. I want to make a distinction here between making a good decision and making a right decision. Anybody want to hazard a guess on what do I mean by that? What's a good decision versus a right decision? Okay. Good decision. Yes, ma'am.
So a good decision would be wise, meaning there's thought and intention behind it. And
okay.
A right decision implies that there's only one way to do it. It's
an outcome based, mm-hmm. Right? So a good decision has to do with the process, is the way I think of it. So I'm interested in how do I make a good decision? This is the process by which I make a decision, whereas making the right decision has to do with the outcome. Was this the right decision in this particular moment? And then there's a question of how do I know? So I'm more interested in the first, making a good decision. And what I want us to think about is how do we make our best decisions? And that then becomes our guide for how we think about parenting. So two traps, here's where I'm going to start. We're going to start with a negative here. Two traps to avoid in decision-making, paralysis and rashness. And by that, I don't mean a skin condition. So, now, these are kind of extremes, okay? So you have paralysis over here, analysis by paralysis, paralysis by analysis, that's it. And then over here, you've got rashness, not a skin condition. And so these are kind of two polar, and what I recognize is that some of you are going to fall on one side, some of you will fall on the other, and a lot of us kind of fall in between. And we kind of go back and forth depending on the situation. Okay, but let's unpack these a little bit just for the sake of categories as we think through this. So the paralysis loop, this is for all of us who overanalyze. Any overanalyzers? Parenting overanalyzers? Yeah, a few hands. Okay, good. Some of you are still thinking, should I raise my hand? I get it. Totally fine. So this is a vicious cycle. Anybody been stuck in the paralysis loop, the overanalyzing loop? This is my wife and I both fall into this category, which is a dangerous combination, okay? Dangerous. I have just enough rashness, not skin condition, in my life that I bump us out of this sometimes. But we're both overthinkers, okay? We think through everything. And then what we try to do, okay, this is what's happening. We're trying to take uncontrollable and really unsolvable situations oftentimes, and I'm trying to crush it in my mind vice, right? I'm trying to think this thing into submission, and I'm trying to control it. So I look at this situation, and I go, okay, here's all the variables. Here's everything that's going on, and I've got to analyze all of them. I have to break it down. And then what happens is I realize that, okay, I'm not really getting anywhere. That stresses me out, and then I get anxious over it. And so what do I have to do? Well, my only solution is to run back and think about it even more, which stresses me out even more. So I think about it even more, which stresses me out even more. This is the vicious cycle that we get caught in, okay? Now, the underlying, I see some nodding. Yes, been there. So here's the underlying, can I say, this is the underlying problem. It's fear. It's fear of, I can't control this. I can't control the outcome. I don't know the perfect solution. I am recognizing my own limitations of solving this, even if I don't want to admit it, so I keep trying, and so I'm afraid. And so I keep thinking. So this is the underlying issue, is fear. Paul has something to say about this. He says, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. I'm going to jump around to a couple of passages. I don't normally do that. If you're here for the Colossians series, you know how tedious we can go verse by verse. This is a little different. So don't then come up later and be like, I don't like that you proof text. Stop. So think about the context here. What if you look at like the verses right before this, what is Paul telling Timothy? You don't have your Bibles open to this, so you won't know. He's inviting Timothy to come join him in Rome, where Paul is imprisoned for the gospel. So it's like, Timothy, hey, buddy, I'm writing you this letter. I want you to come join me in Rome, where, by the way, I'm being persecuted. You should totally come check this out. It'll be great. And Timothy's like, maybe not. So what is he saying? Hey, don't be afraid. He's not giving us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and self-control, okay? Now, real quick, and this is really important. Fear in and of itself is not sin. Every once in a while I run into people and we struggle with this at times. We have such a negative connotation for fear, and some people have such strong categories. It's like, well, fear is bad. Fear is wrong. Hold on. Fear is an emotion. It is a physiological, psychological response to something outside of me that is scaring me for either good or bad reasons, okay? Fear in and of itself is not a bad thing. In fact, if you don't fear, if you don't have that emotional response, then you're going to die, basically, okay? Because you're going to do stupid things. You have no fear. My daughter, too, no fear, okay? That's why we struggle to keep her alive, right? It's why you childproof your homes when you have little kids, because they have no idea what to be afraid of, okay? So there's fear is good, okay? There's a healthy place for fear. The problem here is, notice, self-control. There's a control issue here. Does my fear control me, or do I allow my fear to inform me about how I should be living and how I'm making decisions? So God has hardwired me to have fear, and there's a good use of that, and then there's a bad use of that. I can be paralyzed by fear. That's where that overanalysis kicks in. I can be paralyzed by that, or I go, hey, there is something for me to be cautious here. There's a fear that I need to be aware of, but it does not control me. Rather, there's self-control. Notice here, though, even the context, Paul is always taking this, and he's taking it back to God himself. That God's the one who's in control of this, ultimately. He is the one who empowers me, even for self-control. So this is God's power that empowers me. This is the Spirit of the living God that is living inside of us, that rose Jesus from the dead. So this power and then the love of God that then empowers me, those together then enable me to have control rather than being controlled by my fear. Does that make sense? So what I want to always come back to is that God is the one who's got this, so therefore why would I be afraid? In fact, again, Paul has something really helpful to say here. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? Couldn't have said it better myself. So if I know the power of God, and I know that the same God who has control over all things has a love for me that is beyond my wildest dreams, then what do I have to be afraid of? So I don't have to be controlled by fear, but instead I can have control over my own emotions. So in conclusion for this, where we're headed with this, is just this. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. So if you are like me and you get stuck in the paralysis loop, this over-analyzing, if the underlying issue is fear, then the solution very simply is, in light of who God is, in light of his love for me, don't be afraid. Now, I didn't say it was easy. I'm just saying this is where our minds need to be tracking. Okay. Okay, let's move to the next one. Yeah, Seth.
Can I ask a quick question on the previous slide?
Yeah.
So obviously people can be against you. So when it says who can be against you, what is how should you interpret that? What do you deal with people like? How do you deal with people that are against you?
People that are against me? So in the context of talking about the fear issue, right, it's just a matter of like I don't need to be afraid of anyone. Okay? I don't have to have the spirit of fear as Paul says to Timothy, in the sense that it controls me. So I have to have, so fear is necessary for courage, correct? If I don't have healthy fear, I can't be courageous. Superman isn't courageous. Nothing can hurt him. It doesn't take courage for him to run into a burning building. The fire's not going to hurt him. A fireman, however, it takes great courage because he is aware of the danger. He's aware of how that could hurt him. So it doesn't mean that I'm not afraid ever. In fact, I had a guy who was like, sin, fear is sin. I had a conversation with this guy, super binary, black and white, God bless him. Fear is sin. I said, Jesus in the garden, what do you do with that? I never thought about that. You should, okay? So Jesus has fear. So fear, again, is a healthy and normal, like, good response, okay?
Yeah, but not fear, but how do you, because I feel like that's, you know, you kind of lit off this thing with all these sort of things that are, like, hard to parent or whatever.
Yeah, all the things we're trying to figure out how to handle.
A lot of times things that are against us, and not that you don't fear them, but how do you, we're talking here, how do you approach those things mm-hmm. that are against you, I guess, instead of just saying, don't fear them, what do you, is there an alternative to not fearing it? Like,
Can you give me a little bit? Because I may be going there. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Just hang tight. Step one. Yeah.
In the context of the scripture, compare it to God. And there is no argument. So
yeah.
Whatever I'm facing, my child's facing, and the who can be against us, well, there can be a whole heck of a lot against you, but God's bigger.
Yeah.
So in the kid context, you can go, oh, God's bigger than your end, when you said, it reminded me, I can't remember who it was, the Mountain Bible, was that in the presence of fear, it cues courage. And like you said, you can't have courage without it.
Yeah.
So that's just the more context of, yes, we're afraid, yes, there's countless against us, but in the grand scheme of things, we're afraid of God.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Of all that. So, exactly. If God is for us, then who can be against us? So, we're taking this piece by piece here, okay? Piece by piece. First piece is, there's a lot to be afraid of. And that's what I was trying to get from the beginning is, there's so much that could overwhelm us and that could terrify us and to be afraid of. But in light of who God is, in light of what we know as believers, of his love for us and the power that he has, then don't be afraid, okay? Deep breath. Before we can get any further, we have to start there. All right, second part here. You're killing me, Seth. Come on, buddy.
It's not saying be passive, right? I mean, don't be afraid of me. I'm just going to be chilling, right?
No, it's not saying that.
Okay.
I really think I'm going to get where you're trying to go. I just can you trust me? Just a hair. Okay. All right. The quality of being careless or unwise without thought for what might happen or result. This is, again, not skin condition, rashness, or brashness. You could have added a B on the front. Okay. So, if you have the paralysis loop, then we have the rash response. So what's the problem with this? So again, some of you, you're the analyzers. Couldn't even decide whether to raise your hand or not. You're thinking about it. And then some of us, right, you're the activators. You're the doers. You're the, I'm just going to get this done. And there's a sense in which, hey, I know I can't figure this out. I know that I can't analyze this. I know I can't solve this. And so I'm not even going to bother with it. I'm just going to act. By the way, overanalyzers, oftentimes, the fact that we get anything done is because at some point we do this. We're just like, forget it, I'm done, and act. Okay? So again, I'm dealing with extremes here to give us some categories. Okay? So don't beat me up over the lack of nuance here. I'm just trying to give us some categories here. Okay? So the rash response here, the danger is we don't understand the situation sufficiently. Okay, so on one hand, we can overthink it. There's another danger on the other side where we don't bother. Okay, and in our haste, then, to ease the pain of not having made a decision, we sort of charge in, bull in a china shop. Okay, anybody ever make a decision and you were like, wow, I really didn't think that through? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this is the other response. And again, not many people fall into only one category. Okay. All of us live in the in-between. But here I think there's a question is, what's the underlying problem here is that there's a lack of appropriate fear. Okay, so on the one hand, there's a fear that paralyzes us. There's a lack of appropriate fear of recognizing that there are bigger things in motion, that there are questions that need to be asked, that we need to think through things. In fact, the Proverbs say a lot about this, actually. In fact, when you get to Proverbs 1:7, right at the beginning here, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but it's fools who despise wisdom and instruction. So he makes this interesting parallel here that one, there's clearly a healthy kind of fear. This is specifically the fear of the Lord, and it's the beginning of knowledge. But then fools, these are the ones who aren't thinking. These are the ones who are not worrying about the process of their decision-making. These are those of us who are just acting rashly, without wisdom, without instruction. So before we go any further, what is the fear of the Lord here? What is this talking about here? Is it talking about us quavering and hiding, quaking in our boots before God? Kind of. How would you describe this? Yeah.
It's reverence.
Yeah, reverence. Perfect word. Yeah, reverence. Awe. This is who God is. He is the creator God. We are not. He is over all things. He is control. He is sovereign. We are not. We are his creators. Or we are his creations. Excuse me. He is the creator. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. This is interesting. In Proverbs 9:10, it takes this one step further. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. How is fear of the Lord the beginning of wisdom and knowledge? Yeah.
So the way I look at it is, if you are afraid of something or a situation, you should be a little bit cautious to do something.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you're climbing a mountain, you should be a little cautious about falling down, right?
Yeah.
So you're not too quick to make a decision. So if you have a fear of the Lord, you're not so quick to go do something on your own.
Yeah.
You say, wait, I need God's wisdom to do something. Let me consult him before making a decision.
Yeah.
He imparts his wisdom upon us to make the right decision.
Have you ever... I love that, Alan. We've all, I won't even ask the question, we've all been in places where we've made decisions, and it, if you think back on it, God never factored into the equation. Correct? We've all made those decisions where we simply acted, and God was not part, he never factored in. He never crossed our minds. What the fear of the Lord does, again, it's this reverence, it's this awareness of God's presence. And what the author here is saying is that we cannot have a right view of the world or a particular situation without an awareness and a proper framework of the fact that God is present, that God has a desire, that God is working behind the scenes even in that situation. Does that make sense? If I take God out of the picture, if I take him out of that equation, then whatever mathematical equation I'm doing right there, it's wrong. It's inadequate. And so the fear of the Lord then is what allows me to have a proper framework, a proper understanding of life, of what's happening in any given situation. Okay? Now just hang on to that for a second. Yeah, Aaron.
I was just going to point out too that I think the fear kind of does talk about trembling and quaking, because I think the key word here is beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord isn't wisdom. The fear of the Lord is beginning with,
right,
which is what you're saying. You have to know your place.
Exactly.
And his place.
Yep.
It's not a buddy you're asking for advice from, and maybe you'll take it, maybe you won't.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not a peer relationship.
Yeah.
God, let me know what you think.
Yeah.
I'll factor that in. Okay. No, it's a recognition of this is the Lord, as Alan was saying, like, this is the Lord. He's the creator. We are the creation. And we exist to serve him and to live in light of who he is. And that then informs, it becomes like the grid through which I interpret and understand everything that I'm doing. And if I don't have that, then however I'm viewing the situation of the world that I'm in is distorted, right? It's not clear. So think of it as like the correct power of your lenses. Okay? As you put those on, now I'm seeing the world as it actually is, but if I discard that and say, well, I'm not really worried about God in this equation, then everything's blurry and messed up. Yeah?
Yeah, I think that the fear of the Lord helps shift fear of other things, right?
Yeah.
So the fear of the Lord allows us to be cognizant of these things and not fearful of them.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you put that list up there, of the 30-second list, the 60-second list, would have taken a while, right? But when I look at those things, I think, okay, the goal is to be cognizant of them,
yep,
and not fearful of them. But
right.
Without fear of the Lord, then we will be fearful of those things.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. So let me kind of put a bow on this. We're going to go to, I think, where maybe Seth wants us to go. Okay. So how's all right? So it's just this. If you were to put this in the words of the author of the Proverbs, he'd just say this: don't be rash. Don't be foolish. And he says a lot about being fools, okay? Don't be foolish, okay? So we have don't be foolish, don't be afraid. This is the negative. Let's put it in the positive. Be wise and be courageous. And notice that both of these are produced by reverence for God. And we saw this in both of these. To be wise, to not be afraid and to not be foolish, both require me having a right perspective of who God is and who I am in light of him. And so this wisdom isn't a wisdom that is separate from God. It's not courage that has nothing to do with God, but this is wise wisdom and courage that's produced by reverence for God. So on the one hand, we have courage that comes from knowing that God is God, that God is in control, that he is sovereign. I can't juke God, okay? You thought I was going this way, God. Tricked you. Went over here. And now I've messed it all up. No, no, no. God is God. He is in control of all things. But then wisdom and seeing that God is present, he's active, and he's in control of every situation, okay? So be wise and courageous. Let me ask you, can you think of any two things that would be more valuable in making your best decisions in life than wisdom and courage? Because I can't think of anything. Because if I have wisdom to see how God is present, how God is acting, and I'm looking for him in every situation and thinking, okay, what is God doing here? What does he want to do in my child's life? What does he want to do in my life? If I am looking for that and then courageously acting in accordance with that, I don't know where else to go from there. It doesn't get any better than that, if I can put it that way, right? So if I have that combination to be wise and to be courageous, that is how I make my best decisions. To see that God is present, that he loves me, that he is interested in this situation, and to look to see how is he moving? What does he desire? And then the courage to say, okay, I'm going to follow his lead in this. I can think of no two things that are more valuable than this. And if I can take it a step further, I can't think of any two things more valuable to instill in my children as they make their best decisions in life than wisdom and courage. To come alongside my children and to say, let me show you out of reverence for God. Okay, remember, all of this is produced by reverence. Let me tell you who God is. And then in that, there is courage in this. You can have courage and confidence in the Lord God. And then out of that, also, let's, again, look for God in this. Let's learn together. How do we see God acting? What does God desire for your life? For me to instill wisdom and courage produced by reverence for God, I can think of no two things more valuable for my kids in navigating the world. Okay? So let's go back to this. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it. I'm only going to deal with the first part this week. We're going to get to the second part in later weeks. Anybody here have the joy of teaching your son or daughter to drive? Anybody have that great experience? Got one? Few? There's more hands coming up. Yeah. How was that?
Brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, no, don't ever do it. Oh, okay. Yeah, just don't. Yeah. Yeah. My parents were like, all right, somebody else do that. Wise. So neither of my parents taught me to drive. My dad tried to teach me to drive a stick shift. This was fascinating. My dad is super guy. We're in there, and I don't know why I'm rabbit trailing in this. I had a flashback to my dad trying to teach me to drive a stick shift. Okay, thankfully I already knew how to drive, but was going to learn to do this. So I kept killing it. Everybody know how to drive a stick shift? Some people do, some people don't. Okay, so you have to keep it in gear. Oh man, I shouldn't even go into this. Anyway, I kept killing it, and he finally goes, he turns to me, this is so my dad, he goes, don't you even understand how a gear shift works? And I went, no! And he went, oh. And then he explained it to me, and I was fine after that. It's like, why would you assume that I knew how to, that's why? Anyway, all right. I love my dad. All right, so let me ask you, when you were teaching your son or daughter to drive, can you imagine if you had tried to teach them by telling them every possible scenario for every possible situation, every response, action, reaction that they will ever encounter in driving? Would that have worked? No? Why not? What's wrong with that? Anybody?
You can't know.
You can't know. It's too many. You can't do it.
But I regret some of the things I didn't tell them.
Well, that's true. Yeah, there's always going to be that, okay? But however your kids are they good drivers?
Oh.
Oh, okay. We won't even. All right.
You need to go ask the Sonic menu.
I'm not. Oh. Fair enough. Fair enough. All right.
Yeah, bad week, Lucas.
Bad week. So train a child in the way that he should go. Whatever it means, it can't possibly mean that we're supposed to tell our kids every possible decision, the right decision in every possible situation that they'll ever have for their lives. And yeah, this is often how it feels. Instead, can I suggest that I think we can read into this a little bit to say that the way that we train a child is that we train them with wisdom and courage. We train them with wisdom and courage in reverence to God. In the way, how should he go? How should she go? They should go wisely and courageously. They should have a reverence for God that produces wisdom and courage in them. And that's the way that they should go. That's the path upon which we want them to go. We don't know exactly where that path will lead. But we know that if they go there with wisdom and courage, then they will be making the best decisions. It doesn't mean that every decision plays out perfectly. What it means is that they are becoming the kind of people who will make the right kind of decisions. Do you see the difference? That is our role as parents. It's not to produce only the outcome. I want you to get the right decision every single time, and I'm going to make the right decision every time. But what I want to do is I want to come alongside my children, and I want them to learn how to be, to shape them, to be the kind of people who know how to make the best decisions. Okay? Yeah.
I ask one question. Yeah. You may have said this, but the way, are you saying that the way is better interpreted, the method or manner, rather than the exact path?
So in the Hebrew, it can be either one.
Okay.
If you look at it, it can have to do with like conduct of life, and it can have to do with like a path. So it's obviously it's metaphorical language. It's the way he should go. It clearly doesn't mean like a literal path. It can have to do with the path that is characterized by, and there's an understanding there in light of all the rest of the Proverbs that it's the right path. It's the good path, but it's a path that's characterized by, and there is a sense in which it can be the conduct of life. And so I'm attributing that to character.
Yeah, I think so. We get sidetracked thinking, is this the one?
The one path. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And probably all of us at different times have struggled with, or I certainly did, of, well, does God have one specific, like, this is the path that I'm supposed to, like, walk this line, and if I fall off, I'm out of God's will. And I find in Scripture that God is, and I'm going to do a less more than, not either or, but God is more concerned with who I'm becoming as a person in my character than this specific line. Now, it's not an either or. He does care about outcomes. He does care about decisions that I make. But remember that God is ultimately concerned with who I am and who I'm becoming. And so I think that this holds true then. If this is true of us, then this is true of our kids, of how God wants us to parent our kids, that our best parenting decisions aim to shape our children into the kind of people who make the best decisions. And if I could phrase it one other way, I'll put it this way. My goal is to wisely and courageously train my kids to be wise and courageous. And again, all of that is produced and in light of reverence for God. And then this is what I was alluding to before here, that character, it's not an either or. Outcomes matter. Decisions matter. They have ramifications. Okay, so it's not a, well, it doesn't matter what I do, as though I can somehow divorce that from character. God uses the real world, real decisions and all of that to produce character, and then that character then informs how I then act in the world, okay? So that it's not either or, but in terms of God's desire for me is that I would become a follower of Jesus Christ more and more, increasingly, faithful to him. And it's the same for my children. That God's desire for them is that they would have this character that's reflective of his character. And so what we find then is, and this is the beautiful part of this, is that while it feels like there are a million ways to get it wrong, I think that there's another way of looking at it, that actually there's a million ways to get it right. There's a million different ways that God is giving us opportunities each and every day in decisions, not to think of it in terms of, will I do it right or will I get it wrong, but to think, God is giving me another opportunity that as I walk through this, he is shaping me to look more like Jesus. And that, to me, is an incredibly comforting thought. I won't know, and we're going to talk about this in subsequent weeks, how do we know if we got it right? How do we know if we got it wrong? There are outcomes that are involved. But on this side of it, as I can't know that, if my aim and what I'm recognizing is God's work in my heart, God's work in my children's heart, then I don't have to be paralyzed. And I also don't have to just go, well, it doesn't even matter. But instead recognizing that God is in the process of shaping me. God is in the process of shaping my children. And how can I be part of that process? Well, be wise and courageous. I think there's great comfort in that. So when we come back to this question, what should I do? How should I handle all of those things? Okay, let's reframe the question. Let's not ask this. Instead, let's ask, who does God want my kids to become? Who does he want them to be? Okay, that gives me a completely different approach when it comes to all of these different questions. And here's where I think this becomes really practical, okay, in the last few minutes here. What it feels like when we see that list of how can I handle all of these different things, it feels like there are so many decisions, and there are. There are so many decisions, and there's so little time. How can I possibly have time to think through all of these? How can I have time to analyze all of this and do all the necessary research and to weigh all the variables? Or I'll just make as many decisions as possible because that's what I'm faced with. Okay. Does anybody, am I making any sense here at all? Anyone overwhelmed by the number of decisions they have to make for their children? Okay. In a given day, all the decisions that you're faced with making. And so what it feels like to us is there are so many decisions, there's so little time. But the wise parenting and courageous parenting, I think, plays the long game. And here's what this does. This is the beauty. And this is where I think this is so practical. Wise parenting plays the long game. And what it means is that I'm not as concerned with every single moment-by-moment decision. But instead, I have this question in my mind. Who does God want my child to become? Who will they be when my child is 10? When they're 15? When they're 25? When they're 35? Okay, that's the long game. I'm not just thinking about, okay, what's my child going to do this weekend, okay? I'm thinking, okay, who do I want my son Gabriel to be in 20 years from now? What kind of man do I want him to be? What kind of father do I want him to be? Okay, now, what does that do? It means that all these decisions that I'm faced with, well, some of them just got a lot more important, and some of them got a lot less important. How many of you like fewer decisions in your life? Can I tell you a secret? There are so many decisions that we feel are critical, life and death, and we will freak out over them for us overanalyzers. And what the long game says is, look, wisdom is going to lead us to see that some are more critical than others. There are some big decisions that if we can get those right with wisdom and by God's grace and together in conversation, that sort of set the path, if you will, for the type of person that your child is going to become. And there's some along the way that you go, this isn't critical. This isn't going to matter in 5 years. This isn't going to matter in 2 years. This isn't going to matter in 10 years, because what are we playing? The long game. Some of those, we may not get those as right every single time. It's okay. You can course correct on a lot of those little decisions. There's some big decisions. We need to be wise. We need to take our time. We need to stop. And the trick with wisdom is to know which are which. Okay? But that is, I hope that's encouraging to you. I find that really helpful, because it's easy for me, again, as an overanalyzer, to feel that every decision is critical. Every decision is equally important as every other one, and it's not true. There are actually fewer decisions that really require the prayer and the time and conversation, and we are going to get this right. But I want to make sure that I get those right. And then here's where the courage comes in. If I'm going to parent this way, it takes courage, because it means saying no to a lot of things that feel really good right now in light of better things in the long game. It means not always being my kid's best friend. It means not being the most popular person in my home sometimes. It means making hard decisions, okay? And it means following through. So the wise approach, right? The long game, but then it takes courage to walk that path. So we're going to stop here because we're about to close. But I hope, and then I'm going to turn back to Seth and find out if we're even close here. But here's on the negative side, framing it in the negative is, look, don't be afraid. Okay? I know that's duh, but we need to be reminded of that. If it was easy, we wouldn't have to keep coming back to Scripture and be reminded. Jesus wouldn't have to keep saying, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, okay? It's not that we don't know it, it's that we don't get it, okay? So don't be afraid. If you're afraid, then there is a wrong perspective of God, okay? You've either removed him from the equation or you're not seeing him in light of who he actually is. And that's just something you need to pray through, okay? So don't be afraid. Don't be foolish either, okay? There are things that the decisions that we make, they matter. The fact that you're in here, you care, okay? So I'm preaching to the choir on this part. But don't be foolish. We need to prayerfully consider and be wise how we make decisions. But then positively, be wise, be courageous. And that is produced by reference for God. Who is God? Who is he? Who are you in light of him? And then very practically what that means is that I'm playing the long game when it comes to my kids. I'm not freaking out over the day-to-day. I'm just not. Now, I will, but I'm going to choose not to, okay? And then the courage is to follow through in that.